Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Brian Maher is the superintendent for the Sioux Falls Public School District. He joins us now to talk about district efforts to increase the diversity of its teaching corps. Brian Maher, welcome to In the Moment.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
It is nice to have you back, and in a strange twist of fun, the last time we had you on, we were talking pole vaulting later in the show, and today we get to talk pole vaulting later in the show with Derek Miles. So I guess just when you come on, we also have to talk pole vaulting, apparently.
Good.
So.
Good. I'm glad to see him get his just desserts and getting his Olympic medal, and he's somebody I actually followed through my girls when they were competing as well at the University of Nebraska. The kids that he now coaches are just some of the best in the country.
Right.
He's absolutely outstanding as a coach, just as he was as a competitor.
That leadership is so important. So we're going to switch back and talk about the leadership in the Sioux Falls School District and the teachers and sort of the makeup of that group of teachers compared to the student body. What numbers can you tell us about the diversity of the student body in Sioux Falls Public Schools and then compare that with, the people who are in front of the classroom?
You bet. Let me take it even back a step further and talk about a comparison over time of our student body. One of the things that we looked at in the development of our strategic plan was the diversity that our students have in our schools today. And when we look back 25 years ago, our student population 25 years ago was 95% Caucasian and 6% minority status students, so a predominantly white student population. Today, when we look at our student population, we are at 65% Caucasian and 35% minority status for our student population. So when you think about that, 25 years ago, if you walked into a classroom, you were most likely going to see a Caucasian student. You had a 94% chance of seeing a Caucasian student and only a 6% chance of seeing a student who was not Caucasian. Today, it's more than one in three students who are not Caucasian. So in a fairly short period of time, 25-year span, one generation, that demographic makeup has really changed. Now, if you contrast that with our teaching population is predominantly Caucasian. And if you take out of our teaching population those teachers who teach at Sonia Sotomayor, most of them are native-speaking Spanish speakers in our Spanish immersion program, we are about the same percentage today, about 98% Caucasian versus 25 years ago. So while our student population has changed, our teaching population really hasn't changed over that same 25-year period of time.
So when did you start looking at this and identifying it as something that you wanted to address in the strategic planning?
Really within the last year, when we put together this next iteration of our strategic plan, this came out during that time frame of here's something we need to look at, and began putting initiatives together for how we will to begin to address it.
How surprised were you and the other leaders of the district?
I think surprised is probably the correct word as we looked at that. Not surprised from our student makeup, but we just kind of thought that our adult makeup would have followed that same pattern. But the fact of the matter is it really hasn't. And that's really true, I think, across the city of Sioux Falls. If you think about the demographic makeup of our younger population, it's different than the demographic makeup of folks my age. Quite a bit different. Mm-hmm. In fact, I saw an article in the Argus Leader here about 2 months ago that talked about demographic changes in the city of Sioux Falls, and I think it said in that article that the city of Sioux Falls had about a 20% minority makeup. And I thought that was interesting given the fact that our student population in the district has about a 35% minority makeup. And I guess what that tells me is our city and certainly our school district continues to evolve. So as our younger population grows into that workforce age, I think you'll see a change across the city. I'm certain you'll see a change from a demographic perspective in the school district.
Is that a change that's just going to take care of itself naturally? Or when you talk about initiatives from the district itself, there are going to be ways that you will encourage a greater, diverse balance in amongst teachers? Does you just wait for those kids to grow up and naturally journey into that profession?
We're going to be a little more intentional about it. I think you will probably see some change over time, some natural change as the demographic changes. But we want to be a little more intentional about it. We would love to see our adult population mirror our student population. And I don't think we can wait for another 25 years for that change to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is we've actually reached out to some folks and said, how do we go about this? What do we do? Is it our recruiting efforts or what is it? And we've had folks tell us that certainly recruiting can make a difference, at least from a short-term perspective. But what we've heard from our friends in Vermilion at the University of South Dakota is what you really want to do is try to engage those students who are in your city right now and who are going to be in your workforce in a short period of time. And so what we've done is we've really started recruiting those students who are in our schools today and have talked to them about the viability of teaching as a profession, about education as a great lifestyle for them in the future, and have started to put in front of them some opportunities for college and potential future employment by reaching out to our high schools and in general, but to our minority students in our high schools specifically, and talking with them about education as a profession, and also providing some campus visits for them as well.
It might be an obvious thing to talk about, but I think that it's worth contemplating. What's the problem if your makeup of teaching staff doesn't mirror the kids that are in the classroom? What's at stake?
I think a lot of it is perspective. I think we have a tendency to move into areas where we have the greatest level of comfort. Mm. And when I think about it from an ethnic perspective, I tend to migrate into that area where ethnically I feel greater comfort. So if I have a teacher who looks like me, it might give me a greater deal of comfort than a teacher who doesn't look like me. And when I think about that from a diverse perspective, really I think about it from a socioeconomic standpoint, from an ethnic standpoint, from a gender standpoint. I think all of those things are important to us when we hire. And then, of course, the thing that's most important to us is to have that competent and qualified teacher in front of students. But competency, qualifications, they don't understand socioeconomic status or ethnic status. So there's no reason to believe that we can't have a highly skilled, highly trained workforce that is also a mirror of our student population.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Brian Maher with the Sioux Falls Public School District. He's the superintendent, and we're talking about how the district is trying to grow and diversify the teachers that are coming by reaching out to the students that they currently have, encouraging them in education careers and so forth. And Superintendent Maher, I'm wondering about leadership. You know, the highest levels of leadership in the Sioux Falls School District, are there areas that you can, or initiatives where you can look at who's making the big decisions and make adjustments there to include more diverse perspectives?
Yeah, absolutely there is. We are, I mentioned USD already. One of the other things we're doing with the University of South Dakota right now is embarking at our administrative levels on cultural awareness. And they are in right now working with what we call a think tank group. of 10 district-wide administrators on what does cultural awareness mean, what can we do to provide that cultural awareness into our organization, and number one, just be aware of what that topic means. Secondly, here, just in a couple of weeks, USD is actually bringing in a group of folks from Oregon who have gone through a similar set of initiatives fairly recently, and so we're going to learn from them in terms of what does it look like to have your district, number one, become culturally aware, and number two, be cognizant of the hiring practices that are going to impact that employee demographic. So we've got a lot to learn, and we've got a lot of initiatives moving towards that capacity right now.
When we look through the lens of history, and let's talk about some of those teachers who might be of minority status and, you know, might be in front of a classroom of a large percentage of white children. Are you hearing any feedback from those teachers who say, are they supported by parents, or are they seeing, you know, racism in the classroom? Is that a challenge to overcome?
I'm not hearing that to any great degree at this point, but one of the things that we certainly want to do is we want to hear from the... I'm sorry, I've got a tickle in my throat. I apologize for that. We certainly want to hear from the experts in the field, and we consider our own folks who are in our classrooms today some of the best experts that we can learn from.
What are you hearing from the students? Have you reached out, as you reach out to these kids and listen to kids from all backgrounds, you know, what they feel about moving into education as a profession? What are they telling you?
That's such a great question. I will tell you, one of my aha moments was last spring, so almost a year ago, probably 11 months ago now, I think it was last May, where I had a conversation. I've got a student advisory group, a superintendent's advisory group of just over 20 students from throughout the district, all of them high school students. And in that group, we had four minority students as part of that group. And I asked them about this concept of how do we put greater diversity into our teacher workforce. And it was like I turned the light on for three of these four students, and they really took over how important it was to them to have somebody that looked like them in a classroom, because they don't see that to any large degree right now. And it was a fascinating conversation. The next thing I asked them to do was, how do we make that happen? And the first, and I think the easiest thing there is to say, we got to recruit and bring them in. But some research shows that when we recruit and bring people in who aren't from this area, they don't understand what South Dakota is like. And the snow could look really pretty on a postcard, but when you have to scoop it and move it and realize that it doesn't melt and go away in a day or two, that maybe they're not as fascinated by it when they live in it, and they tend to migrate back to their area of comfort, which maybe has less snow. So we've really got to attract those who live here and understand where we are right now. When I ask the students, would it have mattered to you, would it matter to your peers, if we would invite you into education and give you some experiences while you were in high school, it was like, again, I'll use that, light bulb turned on, and it was an emphatic yes, this would have been so important to us. So that's the primary conversation I've had with students, and while that was a small group of voices, I think it was a representative group of voices for our student population.
You know, we did a story last week as we talked about people leaving South Dakota or leaving smaller towns, and touched on this idea of the story that you tell about your community matters, and your first audience is your kids. And I'm just wondering about the story that we tell about education to our students. You know, do we need to consider how we sort of present this occupation in a state like South Dakota, where the pay isn't going to be the highest in the country? Do we need to sort of expand that narrative to make it more appealing to students who might of all colors and all backgrounds who might go into education?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. In many ways, I think we've been our own worst enemy in education, and I don't mean just in South Dakota. I mean in education in general. Just think back a year ago when the Blue Ribbon Task Force was mobilized, and the conversation that we were having on a statewide level, and how underpaid the teachers are, and that the profession is undervalued, et cetera, et cetera. And I think in some ways we perpetuate that. While I think we need to advocate for greater salaries for teachers, even still, another thing that we should be talking to everybody about is the quality of life that you can have as a teacher and the opportunities that you have as a family person, as a teacher. And I think those are some really important pieces. When you think of this day and age where quality health care can be a real topic, our teachers have quality health care. When you think about pensions and the ability to have a suitable retirement, we have that in education. And so we while the salary may not be what we wish it would be, we can continue to battle for that, but we also have to continue to make folks understand the quality of life, the health care, the pension, some of those things that could easily be lost in the conversation, and how good those are for folks that want to raise a family.
Brian Maher is the superintendent of the Sioux Falls Public School District. Thank you so much, sir, for being here with us again. We'll see you next time.
Okay, have a good day.